It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. Okay, thank you for tuning into the It's Going Down podcast. It's been over 6 months since Unite the Right in Charlottesville, Virginia happened, but obviously the after effects have been weighing heavily on a lot of organizers and people on the ground's minds, and also in their actions to support those people that have faced repression and everything that's happened afterwards. So just to kind of catch us up to speed and to look back as to what's been happening on the ground in Charlottesville, we're going to be talking to a local organizer. And if you can just introduce yourself real quick to the audience.
Hi, yes, I am an anonymous anarchist person of color who's been organizing in Charlottesville for almost a decade now.
Okay, and thank you so much for talking with us today about, we're going to be talking about some heavy stuff, but also it's been inspiring to see everything that you all have been able to accomplish as far as mobilizing people in the wake of everything that happened last summer. But just to get started, while this interview will discuss both post-Unite the Right support as well as all that has happened on the ground in the broad sense, can you try and describe what it has been like for people that were involved in confronting Unite the Right post-August 12th in the broad strokes?
There, a lot of people, now that we are almost 8 months away from the rally, I think people just have a deeper sense that the trauma that is experienced from those events is basically permanent. And it doesn't just stop at Unite the Right. It goes beyond, like, going back to May 13th with the torch rally. From news media recreating images of beatings and the car and all of that, like, the triggers are basically nonstop for people here. There's definitely like a scarring taken place, and the city has very much shifted. At the same time, there's also been a deeper understanding of the underlying issues that sort of would lead to Nazis feeling okay with having a rally here. So there's been deeper understanding of like the housing issues, like the roots of poverty in the city, policing and the anti-blackness rooted in that. Like people have a much more nuanced on this understanding of free speech. And there's just an understanding of what's at stake when we fight, fascists.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, if you're just like sitting on a bus stop with somebody and Richard Spencer's name gets brought up, I mean, is it like just across the board detestation by the general population?
Most definitely.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear. And we're going to be talking about how else a lot of this stuff played out. But in the lead up to the new year and afterwards, there was news that a grand jury had formed. Can you talk a little bit about what this means for, you know, both sides of the coin, both for our team and also our enemies? And how did people in Charlottesville and anti-fascist and anti-racist broadly respond to the grand jury?
So the grand jury that happened last winter, it came out of an effort to file further charges against James Alex Fields because his preliminary trial was in mid-December. However, for this grand jury, they subpoenaed some of the most injured survivors of the car attack. And basically, and for those who have a sort of basic understanding of grand juries, these people would have been facing jail for if they chose to not cooperate. And they would have had a lot of reason to not cooperate because of what's at stake with the state and their patterns of persecution. So the way that we organized, we honestly just sought advice. This was very new to a lot of people here. But fortunately, we were connected with people who had experience with resisting grand juries in other cities and other states, particularly in Standing Rock. And we were able to get people here to do training, and we're very grateful for having that knowledge across the nation and people who are willing to help. So we got a real understanding of what it means to not cooperate, how it is that you build resistance around that, and we built a campaign basically from scratch and within 2 weeks, because that the subpoena was served. The subpoenas were served within about 2 weeks of the grand jury appearance. We had a lot of good support on social media, and we were able to sort of scrape together a press conference / rally to declare that the injured people were not going to cooperate. Even before that, the appearance was supposed to happen, the U.S. Attorney's Office actually withdrew one of the subpoenas and made a deal with another person that they would do an off-the-record sort of interview, and basically so they wouldn't be subjected to a grand jury. So we considered the resistance to be successful. Later on, the U.S. Attorney's Office admitted that it was due to the pressure that they took back the subpoenas. However, a lot of people, local people in Charlottesville, journalists, a lot of the more liberal-minded, were very confused as to why we would refuse to cooperate with a grand jury if it was against a Nazi. And we were very clear and consistent in saying that grand juries are not content neutral, that they always seek to go after anti-racists, and they use forums like those to map out networks and go after people.
And meanwhile, on the other side, we have idiots like Christopher Cantwell who are actively talking to the FBI on the fascist side.
Correct.
But there were neo-Nazis that were subpoenaed for the grand jury, or they were just requested by the FBI to give information, or what do we know about that side of the coin?
We haven't been made aware of anyone who's been subpoenaed for a grand jury on the fascist side. I wouldn't be surprised if that has been the case. However, they honestly are in such shambles with organizing legal support that they probably wouldn't be able to organize legal support for somebody in a grand jury.
Several like screenshots on social media from the fascist side of either people that were live streamers, right, or just like, you know, rank and file Nazis that were.
Gotcha. Yeah. So that what we know of that is it's obviously unclear what charges or potential charges that could be related to. But all that has been visitations or phone calls or sit downs. There hasn't been actual court proceedings that we know of.
And then now turning to the case of DeAndre Harris, his charges were dropped recently in relation to August 12th, 2017. We'll talk about the support and what that looked like in a second. But can you just explain to people how the fascists worked with the judge that originally brought charges against Harris in the first place?
So the charges were brought against Harris by Harold Ray Cruz of League of the South. He worked with a magistrate. He came at some point, I'm guessing early October, late September, to file assault charges against DeAndre Harris. And it was a felony, so it did have to go through a review process. And apparently everybody who saw that in the Charlottesville Police Department agreed with him and signed off on the warrant to arrest DeAndre Harris. So that's a connection there of the fascists and the state. Before the trial and throughout the whole process, Harold Ray Cruz has tried to paint himself as this frail old man. But he's this dude. He happens to be bald, but he's in his 40s. And he was leading up to August 12th. He was openly posting on Facebook about, you know, how excited he was to use his flagpole and his cane to beat up other people. One thing worth noting about his case is that the fact that he filed this warrant and claimed to have been getting beaten, has been used as a basis of defense for the other Nazis who are facing charges for beating up DeAndre Harris. Like their lawyers are saying, oh, they were merely defending Harold Ray Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, the League of the South guys were some of the nastiest people out there. I mean, you can watch the videos. The Nationalist Front contingent, and this is something the local blog Restoring the Honor has done a very good job of doing, is showing that when the Nationalist Front contingent kind of came in, they, you know, started swinging, and the League of the South people were right out in front. And some of those guys, yep, like Tubbs, who's that, you know, older, very tall, very broad-shouldered, really big guy. I mean, you know, he's been in prison before for attempted bombings and robbing, you know, army depots, you know, to get weapons and money for the Klan. I mean, these people know what they're doing. They're not fucking around.
Yeah. Yeah, he was out there directing people and throwing them into front lines, directing them to beat up others.
And just to be clear, a magistrate is what exactly in a legal sense?
Magistrate, they are basically the person you go to if you want to file charges against somebody. They have the power. They have power to a certain degree to fill out arrest warrants if you bring a complaint to them.
Right.
And this, just for context, for those who are outside of Virginia, Virginia legal system for charges like these, criminal charges like these, like assault or robbery, things like that, police heavily rely on people filling them out instead of them investigating and doing their own warrants.
Right. Well, it just shows that every single part of this process for Harris, you know, from the magistrate to who obviously had some connection with this League of the South person to the police, you know, they were completely, you know, right there with him.
Yep. Yeah. They could have said no at any step of the process, but they chose not to.
Well, now turning to the campaign to support Harris, how did that all come together? And there was a lot of people out over the several days that Harris was going into court. How did that support kind of manifest, and what type of work went into supporting him as he went to court?
So DeAndre Harris's story is one that like captivated the media right away. You know, like I was saying, the media sort of exploited this imagery of him getting beaten. However, the fact that those images were out there sort of made it very quick to connect with the issue and feel galvanized. For the actual organizing of court support, there was this loose coalition between the local Showing Up for Racial Justice chapter, the local Black Lives Matter chapter, a local group of clergy called Congregate Siebel, and the Anarchist People of Color Collective, as well as just other loose connections of anti-fascists who came together and were very clear that, one, you know, these were community defenders. They were out there because we wanted to stop a Nazi invasion in our town. So not only did we have to show up for DeAndre Harris, but we had to show up for everybody who got charged on the anti-racist side on August 12th. So we, regardless of what images they're out there, of what DeAndre Harris did, of what Corey Long did, or what Donald Blackney did or didn't do, we were clear that we had to support all of them as a group. And that's one messaging we've actually been pushing a lot, because a lot of people have been focusing on DeAndre Harris. As a model, we actually took a lot of notes, and we literally reached out to a lot of people in Durham who successfully organized to drop all of the charges against the people who were charged for the toppling of the Confederate statue. We're very grateful for a lot of the help and the tips that they provided for that. And we also just held a sustained push on different fronts. People were showing up to the Commonwealth Attorney Joe Platania's office. People were calling in all the time, emailing in all the time, forcing him to keep that in his head and forcing him to have to talk about it on media and have to try to excuse his reasoning for charging someone who was beaten up by white supremacists.
Can we turn now and talk a little bit about the two other African-American Charlottesville locals who are also charged? What charges mm-hmm. are they facing? What is the timeline for them? Are they going to court soon? All that stuff.
Yeah, it's a timely question. So Donald Blackney is one person. On April 16th at 9:30 at the Charlottesville Circuit Court, he will actually be going up to face a local grand jury that is seeking to certify his charges. Out of DeAndre, Donald, and Corey, Donald is facing the most serious charges. They're aggravated assault charges. And one thing worth noting about him is that in the pretrial, the prosecutor was using evidence from documentaries and mainstream media reports footage that shows him and identifies him is being used in court. So it again shows it would point to the importance of how the media and documentary filmmakers trying to mooch off of the sensationalism of August 12th, how it in turn has impacted local residents. And then Corey Long, he is also facing assault charges. However, they are not felonies, they're misdemeanors. And he's going on a trial by judge the next day, April 17th. One thing worth noting about him is that when the judge was ready to find DeAndre Harris not guilty, the judge made sure to talk about Corey Long and try to place the blame on him for the fight that DeAndre Harris ended up getting charged during. So this coalition that has formed around dropping the charges, we've been very clear that there shouldn't be any distinction of a good anti-racist or a bad anti-racist or a good protester or a bad protester. We were all defending the community together, so all charges should be dropped.
Right. And also just on the level of, what anybody is accused of doing. I mean, nobody shot a gun at anybody on our side. Mm-hmm. Nobody ran over anybody. Nobody right. ran over anybody on their side. And also just what does this say about the state's priorities? I mean, we have three African-American local Charlottesville residents that are charged. I mean, what does this mm-hmm. say about just the state and their strategy of repression?
It's a continuation of the anti-black history of the state that a lot of us know of. One case that was recently dug up is in Charlottesville, 1963. There was a similar situation of a picket line in front of a segregated restaurant that racists tried to break up by physically assaulting the people on the picket line. Even though it was clear it was the racists who started it and beat up everybody, the racists ended up filing assault charges against the people on the picket line. And the magistrate certified those charges and they were later found not guilty. So there's a historical aspect to it, but there's also just the way that police violence perpetuates structural racism, in the same way that Corey and Donald and DeAndre are being put on the brunt of the anti-fascist resistance from state repression. When black men get shot by police, the blame is put on the black men who get shot by police.
Right.
And this situation also speaks to just the white privilege surrounding the whole situation that we all have to be aware of in our organizing. When we do these militant actions, the state will seek to go after the most marginalized people first, and we always have to be ready to defend them and have systems of support for them.
Right. And this also mirrors what's going on in Sacramento. The three people that were charged were all people of color.
Right.
And now just turning to the status of the lawsuits that were brought against the alt-right, speaking of largely the various groups from Identity Europa to the now defunct Traditionalist Workers Party and all the various speakers, including Richard Spencer. What is the status of this lawsuit? And I think there's other lawsuits as well. Just what's going on with all that?
So I'll speak to the two big lawsuits going on right now. The first one is the Georgetown Law lawsuit on behalf of the city against all of the groups that were deemed as armed, and that's a very tenuous term, seeking to ban all of those groups from organizing in Charlottesville again. One update from that lawsuit is that League of the South, as an official organization, agreed to a settlement with Georgetown Law that they would be banned as an organization from ever doing or joining an event ever again in Charlottesville. And this includes their membership. So they don't even have to sponsor an event. If any of their dues-paying members are found to be joining events here in Charlottesville, they would be considered to have been violating the terms of the lawsuit. Now, this points to the way that the state, any kind of cooperation with the state to supposedly fight fascism can be a double-edged sword, because you can think about how that would backfire as a precedent towards anti-fascists. And one example of that is that currently Redneck Revolt and the Socialist Rifle Association are defendants in that lawsuit, because in the eyes of Georgetown Law, all of them are bad if they're carrying guns. And there is a very concerted effort to pressure Georgetown Law to drop Redneck Revolt and the Socialist Rifle Association from the lawsuit, because they weren't part of any group that started any violence on August 12th. So for the other lawsuit, that this is the, I've been referring to it as the Kaplan lawsuit. Officially, it's Sines et al. Versus Kessler et al. Mm-hmm. This is a civil suit for damages resulting from the James Alex Fields car attack. Basically, what they're establishing is that if Kessler and all these organizations hadn't organized this rally, we wouldn't have had this car attack happening, which is actually true. Where the case is at right now, it's in discovery phase. The Kaplan lawyers filed a motion for discovery, which is obligating all of the defendants to generate all of the social media and communication information going all the way back to 2015. With the point being that all of this white supremacist organizing going back to 2015 and all this alt-right organizing has been leading up to this point. And even though various defendants have tried to squash that motion, more recently the judge sustained it and is forcing all of them to give up all of this information. Wow. There's also been a default judgment for defendants who were not able to get legal counsel for the suit. And I can only remember the KKK right now being one of those. There's other people that I can't remember. I think Cal Chapman / Bae Stikman is one of them. Mm-hmm. And what this basically means is that they won't get any special treatment after this case is done. They'll just get the default judgment that everyone else is going to get. Wow. And they don't get to have a say in that.
Wow. So they could be possibly dragging the waters for all sorts of information all the way back until 2015.
Correct.
Which could bring up tons of stuff.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of people are pointing out. Like, yeah, sure, you might come out clean out of this very specific rally, but they might find all of this other stuff that you don't want them to find out.
Right. Right. And then this is how the Traditionalist Workers Party got in trouble, because when the whole inter-family affair broke out between Heimbach and his various partners, Matthew Parrott destroyed all of their, logistical information, which they say is in violation of the lawsuit.
So one, a very like hot off the press update on that. Matt Parrott submitted a letter to the judge who is presiding this lawsuit, the Kaplan one, saying that yes, Traditionalist Workers Party website is offline. However, all membership is actually intact, and he will comply with turning in all of that information.
Too busy trying to survive capitalism's daily grind to get caught up on the latest anarchist news? Or maybe you're so wrapped up in your own organizing that it's hard to make time to hear about other liberatory struggles. This Rebel Girl has got you covered. Tune in every Wednesday for new episodes of The Hot Wire, a 30-minute podcast with the latest anarchist news, on-the-ground interviews, a repression roundup, political prisoner birthdays, and announcements for upcoming events. All this and more at crimethink.com.
Too hot. This town is too hot.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
Channel Zero Network, because every countdown ends at zero.
Now, what is the probability, or is it possible that in this situation that people could roll over on each other and start snitching on each other?
I think it's a very high possibility, and what you talked about with Chris Cantwell is a sneak peek of what's to come.
Right, and just so people, if you don't read Gab every day and get all the juicy details, by the way, Gab is like, you know, white power Twitter, or however you can't block anybody. Everything is public, so, you know, go free speech. But yeah, you just go on there and click explore and hit Heimbach, and you'll get a front row seat to the destruction of the alt-right. But essentially, Weave, who works on the Daily Stormer, called bullshit on Christopher Cantwell. Christopher Cantwell is this kind of crazy dude that was one of the speakers at Unite the Right, but saying that he was working with the FBI, or he's going to, and Weave actually released a series of screenshots of Weave talking to Cantwell about that. And then once that came out, Cantwell put an article out, said, yes, I am a federal informant. Yep. Even though what it sounds like Cantwell is doing is just talking to the FBI. It's not clear if he actually is an informant. So even the title might be wrong. But he says he's going to sit down with the FBI, and he said his goal is to get Antifa in trouble. But it's clear that the FBI wants information on anything he's got, which would probably be about the people that's around him.
I mean, from what I've seen of Cantwell, he's dumb enough to fall for it. We know that there have been motions in the background for a federal civil rights case, completely separate from all of this, against the Unite the Right organizers.
Right. And I mean, you know, for the TWP people, I mean, James Alex Fields was rolling with, Vanguard America, which was part of the Nationalist Front. So, I mean, that's where that's going to fall too. So it's going to be funny because, you know, they're going to drag Heimbach's ass to court as well. And none of his friends want to see him. So it's
going to be. Yeah. And Parrott's going to have to decide if he wants to defend him.
Right, exactly. Well, wow. I mean, the big question too is, you know, is Spencer going to have to lose the cotton farm in the end?
Oh yeah, I know, right?
Okay,
we can move on.
Well, just kind of continuing on that note. I mean, since August 12th, what has Jason Kessler been doing with himself? I mean, we see him at these various city council events. Like, what is he doing within the community of Charlottesville? He still lives there. Like, what is he pushing forward?
So we have been wondering what kind of teleportation device he has for himself, because one of the conditions of his release for his previously pending perjury charge was that he would be moving to Ohio to work at a call center. But he's managed to show up to all of these events here, and get back on his, live stream minutes after at a house. So that's happening. But he was facing a perjury charge, I encourage people to look up more information about it. It's a long story. But last week he was, that entire case was dismissed, even though it was a jury trial and the jury was basically ready to, deliberate on their decision about the perjury charge. And right before that, the judge dismissed the entire case because the prosecutor, who is the Commonwealth's attorney for Albemarle County, failed to establish that the perjury happened in Albemarle County instead of Charlottesville. Based on that one technicality, the judge threw the entire case, and Jason Kessler did not have to face any kind of sentencing around his felony perjury charge. Related to Unite the Right rally, he started a podcast to, you know, try to build momentum around it. And he started a forum, like an online forum in his own website. And I encourage people to check it out, maybe sign up for a user account or two, because it's very vulnerable. There are only like 6 members in it right now. And they're talking very openly about their plans for the next Unite the Right. Every time he shows up in person, he's been alone. We haven't seen him since maybe like October. We haven't seen him show up with a single other person, which points to how much in real life support he's lost. Online, he's also been very concerned, openly concerned about optics, because he is currently filing another lawsuit against the city over the fact that they denied his permit for the quote-unquote anniversary rally for August 12th of this year. Ever since he filed that lawsuit, he's tried to tone down a lot of his language and insist that, hey, you know, there won't be any hate speech in this rally. We'll only have American flags and Confederate flags. We will ban any Nazi aesthetics from this, and trying to like be as friendly as possible. My assumption is in hopes to sway the judge in his favor.
But that's the exact same thing they said last time. I mean, they said all the same stuff. They said don't bring swastikas. They said, you know, don't yell racial slurs and, you know, give up Hitler salutes. Same shit happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about just whatever they're kind of talking about in terms of Unite the Right number 2 or whatever in a bit. But just wanted to touch on a couple more points. So I think a lot of people are asking, what is the status with kind of the center of this controversy, what started at the Robert E. Lee statue in Charlottesville? Is it still there, and what's going on with it?
Yeah, it's still there, unfortunately. Both that one and the Jackson statue. The judge, the most recent trial related to that case, is that the judge ordered for the tarps that the city had placed over it to be removed. So they're currently uncovered. Previous to that, there were a couple of times that people from the Virginia Flaggers had gone and taken down the tarps. Two of them were arrested, Brian Lambert and Christopher Wayne. And just yesterday, both of them were found guilty, and they have to serve 8 months for Brian Lambert and 5 months for Christopher Wayne. And then the next court date for that one is April 11th, but that's mostly going to be a sort of logistical trial to set the actual trial date, which will potentially be October and pushing maybe even to next year. So this is going to be a long haul and on the legal side for the statues.
So it's nowhere set in stone that they will be taken down. It's still up in the air.
Nowhere set in stone. The Friends of the Monuments organization is very, very determined to punish the city for deciding to take down the monuments that they own.
Right. And I'm just curious, you know, there's a new mayor, Ms. Walker, African-American woman. How has this changed the dynamics in the town, if at all?
So Nakia Walker is a very long-time organizer, anti-racist organizer in town. She has worked on all sorts of issues around policing, housing, access to local services. She has also been very unafraid to confront the city. I mean, she's been part of all sorts of protests, and she decided to run on a completely independent ticket last fall and ended up winning the most amount of votes total for any candidate previously, being the first African-American mayor of Charlottesville and being the first non-Democrat city councilor in decades. The first independent city councilor in decades. So a lot of people celebrated that as sort of a symbolic show of where the city wanted to head towards. And it felt very inspiring to people. However, like as anarchists and anti-fascists, like we know that like true deep change is going to come by our own merit and not through the government. So while we respect a lot of what Nakia has done for the fight against racism in this town, we will continue the work that we've already been doing.
Right. And then just looking at, you know, beyond Kessler kind of showing up to these meetings, and there was the flash appearance by Richard Spencer and Elliot Klein, who soon was disgraced from the movement after it was learned that he lied about his tours in Iraq. Has the alt-right shown up in Charlottesville at all? Like, have they publicly kind of come around? Have they been putting up stickers? What's that been like?
It's been very light compared to the leading up to August 12th and like the month or two after that. There have been stickers here and there. If people show up, they show up for court dates, and they get thoroughly harassed whenever they show up. And that, you know, you see Twitter polls, like, you know, a couple of days ago, there's a Twitter post of Derek Davis from Traditionalist Workers Party taking a selfie with the Lee statue. So they like trying to be around, but they know that they can no longer get away with public events. And so that's sort of the summary of that.
Right. And just now, if we can turn to, you know, August 12th, 2018, you talked a little bit about this, but, I mean, Jason Kessler, I mean, for whatever it's worth, he is putting forward the idea that there will be another Unite the Right rally. Right now, it seems unclear if he will be able to get the permits. So I'm just curious, how are people in Charlottesville preparing? Is there a counter demonstration being planned? What's going on with that whole thing?
So as far as organizing goes, a lot of people have been very, very focused, just because it's taken so much energy, very focused on the defense over the fallout and the repression, mm-hmm. As well as support for trauma and for survivors, because mm-hmm. that has taken a lot of toll. However, you know, we are still very much keeping an eye on Kessler and every single move that he makes. As far as plans, it honestly would depend on the outcome of the court. However, a lot of us are very clear that there will be a mobilization. We just want to be clear on what expectations to set for August 12th as a result of this federal lawsuit, so that we know how to plan properly. So more of the work that we're doing is sort of behind the scenes, gathering intel, infiltrating groups, and making sure that we have all of the information we need, so that once there are official decisions made, we just need to flip a switch and make a call to action.
Do you think that there would be a difference in the turnout, just locally speaking, either people from Charlottesville or from kind of the surrounding county and area? I mean, would more people come out?
this is where me and my friends are boggled as to why Kessler even wants to try to do another Unite the Right, because there were actually more Nazis than there were counter-protesters on August 12th. People are so thoroughly pissed, not only here in the in Charlottesville, here in the U.S., but across the entire world about what happened.
Right.
There would be no way they could be able to do a rally with the amount of people who would show up if they try to do this again.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, I think a lot of people would show up to have y'all's back. And just before we kind of get to the end, I wanted to turn really quickly. This wasn't in our questions before, but yeah, there was two big things that came out. There was a kind of a think tank that was paid to do like a kind of overview of police actions in relation to Unite the Right. I wanted to get your take on that. And then also there was another article that was published by Shadowproof. And actually, I'll announce here that we're going to have that journalist on this podcast soon. But basically they got a bunch of FOIA documents that show the police were more worried about, quote, anarchist extremists than they were about the neo-Nazis. But I'm just curious, what is your take? I don't know if you read the document, but the... You're aware of what I'm referring to.
This is an internal investigation led by Tim Heafy. Mm-hmm. The city paid him and a group that he put together $350,000 to to conduct all of these interviews and do all of this FOIA and all of this documenting. To what it boils down to is like, what did the city do wrong? And they documented this for the whole summer. So they did for May 13th, city and police response for that, July 8th and, August 12th. I read the whole thing. I read all of the operational documents of the Virginia State Police and the Charlottesville Police Department. Interesting about the Tim Heafy report is that it very heavily relied on fascist interviews that he conducted because they were the ones who were most willing to do the interviews. I guess to try to paint themselves as good or whatever. They actually note that one of the obstacles was that so many anti-racists that they tried to contact refused to give any information. Mm-hmm. So they only had a few people who were actually willing to sit down because there was such severe distrust of anybody related to the city. And so that's where that information led. The conclusion of that document was basically that the police weren't hard enough, that they didn't put enough barricades, that they didn't put enough cops. They didn't have enough cops willing to arrest people on the spot. That they didn't put riot cops in the right locations. It all amounts to like the state wasn't fascist enough.
Right.
And they did these policy recommendations, a lot of them around limiting permit regulations. The city actually took a lot of those recommendations, and now there are all of these restricting things about what you can or cannot carry, whether like you can't have anything that impersonates a medic, you can't have anything that impersonates uniformed personnel. There's all of these like really absurd arbitrary regulations.
This is just for Charlottesville or in general?
This is just for Charlottesville, yeah.
Wow.
And so that happened with the Heafy investigation. And then with the Shadowproof article, that is much more true to what anti-racist experience and what we observed in the community. Mm-hmm. Leading up to July 8th, there were cops showing up to doors of anti-racists, specifically activists of color, women of color, and asking, you know, trying to be really nice, but like asking, so what are you doing? and them, of course, being like, get out of my doorstep. those were actual things that happened. All of the social media surveillance, attempted infiltration of oppositional groups of the Nazis, a lot of hand-wringing over how loud counter-protesters were whenever Jason Kessler would show up downtown. Those were all documented. And the group that you mentioned that helped the police is the Virginia Fusion Center. And they did a lot of documenting and convinced the police that, like you said, the biggest threat was going to be the anarchist extremists. Because that, if you go through their history of their documents, that is who they tend to go after. And that, of course, turned like we knew and like we were telling everybody else, that turned out to be patently false.
That's interesting because there's another series of documents that came out on MuckRock about the Fusion Center in Sacramento, California, so on the other side of the country. But there was a very similar, it broke out very similarly from the Fusion Center. It kind of came this narrative of not only anarchist extremists, but also black identity extremists, specifically yeah. looking at Northern California. And, in an area where there are, established neo-Nazi groups and stuff like that, even to the point where the Fusion Center was actually writing documents and, getting prepared for November 4th, the supposed Antifa civil war that was promoted on InfoWars, which is just, laughable. And it's strange because it shows that they take the right seriously, and whatever propaganda the right puts out, it kind of takes it very seriously. And I think that's because they link up, because they're more scared of just grassroots movements, and especially coming from people of color.
Yeah, and that is totally right, and that's pretty much the experience we had here. Mm-hmm.
But there's recordings that you can find on Restoring the Honor where Mike Enoch is telling the police chief in their interview, he's saying go look at It's Going Down. That's the real violent people, people posting on that right. website, which is hilarious because in the lead up to Unite the Right, I think the only kind of call to action that we published was something that came from Solidarity Seville that just said show up and demonstrate. Yeah. And the other articles that we did publish on Unite the Right was about, stuff from the Daily Stormer and TRS saying, we want a yeah. war, bring weapons, how to conceal carry. I mean, they were making no bones about that this was going to be a violent encounter. So
yeah. And the city is trying really, really hard to backpedal over the fact that they didn't listen to any of those warnings.
Yeah. What does that look like exactly?
Well, they tried to do an apology, and the people shouted them down because we were like, you can't return Heather Heyer's life. It's also become like all of this stuff about, let's do more laws to try to stop the Nazis. But they're all laws that are inevitably going to impact anti-racists because that's who actually lives here and shit. These are measures with UVA and Charlottesville. They're doing all of these regulations around demonstrations and things like that, and what items you can carry where and whatnot, that they claim to be, this is to stop the Nazis, but they're actually going to be using them against the black neighborhoods here, against the poor here, and that's what we've been trying to call out.
Yeah. One last kind of logistical question. Has there been any legal fallout or anything that's happened for the young people that were attacked on August 11th at the university as they linked arms around the statue?
There hasn't been any legal movement that I know of there. When Cantwell talks about the FBI conversations, I believe he's referencing August 11th because he's been very vocal about claiming that the fact that 300 Nazis marched with torches and proceeded to beat a group of 10 or 15 or 15 or 20 young counter-protesters is the counter-protesters' fault. We have seen some motion around an FBI investigation for August 11th. But one thing that happened is UVA is discussing changes to their permit policies. And one of the biggest things that people have been fighting against is this new policy that prevents anyone who's not a student from, or faculty or staff, from openly demonstrating on grounds, which is essentially turning a public university into a private land. And because they can define whatever demonstrating means, you know. And so that's some legal movement in that area. And then, you know, the biggest thing there has been supporting survivors of that night, because a lot of people were very seriously injured. And actually some of them haven't even seen any of the funds out of many of the fundraisers that have come up.
Right. Yeah, very famously, there is a large DSA fundraiser that is apparently people are still waiting to get that money. So,
yeah, happy to talk about that another time, but that's a whole nother mess.
Right, right. And I think the biggest hurdle for a lot of liberals mentally is that the police, you know, are happy to work with the neo-Nazis, and the neo-Nazis are very happy to work with the police, and that's a situation that they, you know, will put themselves in time and time again, you know, working and coordinating with each other. And, you know, there's a reason people don't want to work with the police.
Yeah, that's correct. And actually, the biggest ask from liberals here in town has been, you know, the next time put more police, you know, instead of next time don't allow the Nazis to come here at all, you know?
Right. Well, just in closing, how can people support just this amazing, you know, really frontline organizing and support you all are doing? Is there a way to donate? You know, where can people go for updates? All that stuff.
As far as money, there is a local, 100% local fund that has actually been dispersing funds. It's called the Charlottesville Community Resilience Fund. I can send you a link afterwards. And this is a very low barrier fund, and we take requests. We don't ask, you know, for people to verify this or that. We just take your requests, and we trust people, and we give them what they ask for. So that's one very solid resource for people to donate to. As far as keeping up with what's going on, I highly recommend Solidarity Siebel, which is at Solid Siebel on Twitter. There will be a new website coming up soon for that. And then for more specific updates to Unite the Right and just like analysis and social media around that, there is a new Twitter account called Stop the Next Unite the Right. It's at Stop the Next UTR on Twitter. That is also a local account that has been reporting more specifically on Kessler's doings and resistance to that. And as far as like support and plugging in, I've asked this in other podcasts, but there are a lot of anti-fascists and a lot of anarchists with a lot of knowledge and resources around specific things like medic trainings, establishing defense committees, you know, making materials for demonstrations, security, self-defense, et cetera, this is a small town with a lot of people who are new to organizing, and a lot of those resources and knowledge need to be shared so that we're even more prepared for August 12th, 2018, or whatever might happen this summer. So I, you know, whether it's through It's Going Down or any other means, we would welcome those resources.
Right. Well, on that note, you know, best of luck to y'all, and, you know, everybody listening to this needs to continue to, you know, step up and support and, you know, make those calls when, you know, people call for them. And just to really echo what you were saying, I mean, Solidarity Siebel is an amazing resource. They're putting out now weekly updates about news on the ground in Charlottesville. Really great stuff. They're on Twitter, Facebook, and also they have a blog. There's also this other new Twitter account, Stop the Next, Unite the Right. And really great resources. You know, you'll really get up to the minute news. And thank you so much for coming on, and you know, let us and everybody else know anything else that you all need in terms of support.
Sure, thank you for your time.
22-year-old Stephen Clark in the backyard of his grandmother's home. All he had in his hand was a cell phone.
He's still down, he's not moving. You can't see the gun.
His brother, Stephonde Clark, is calling for justice.
They will pay for this. You're gonna know his name forever, John. You hear me? You're gonna remember, like how you know Trayvon Martin, Mike Brown, Eric Garner, Tamir Rice. You're gonna know.
All my brothers, they killing them like cancer. Zoe had kids, but nobody has answers. Shot 4 times and we seen it on the camera. Heart got colder, she changing her son pamper. Looking at her baby like what they doing to black men. Saw it in the dreaming, this is how it happened. Fuck 12, helpless in the world, I feel. Don't help that I'm mixing all these posted pills. Good kid, mad cop, different city, same plot. Long live Zoe, you will never be forgot. I don't think it's fair cause they shot him in his back. What really make it hurt is they shot him cause he black. I'm looking at my uncles, my brothers, cousins and dad. What happened to the world? Look in the sky, you jack. Once the soul stripped, the body put in the ground. But we get put under rugs and nobody hears a sound.